Information is free.
The law.
There is hope.
When ignorance is converted into knowledge.
Tonight, we care.
Appear to border
and it shows.
The law.
The country.
You will remember nothing you have seen or heard here.
Whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not cooperate, made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.
This could be the start of something truly real. Welcome, my friends, to episode 167 of Media Monarchy. It's April 23rd, 2010. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com, your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. So much to go over this week. Mercury in retrograde, news purge and updates, star-strangled banter and false flag prep, homegrown threataganda and the OKC anniversary, trust polls, terror drills, and the Earth Day unicorn killer. All that, so much more. April 23rd, 2010, it's episode 167 for MediaMonarchy.com.
My Mercury's in retrograde. Worry about what's being missed. Scars on my shins, scars on my knife.
21st century Brit rock from Bloc Party, from their most recent record, Intimacy. That is, of course, called Mercury. On Sunday, April 18th, Mercury, the wise communicator and universal trickster, turned retrograde, sending communications, travel, appointments, mail, and the web into a general snarl-up. Just a little bit of astrological background to set the table for you, my friends. Welcome. Good morning, good night, wherever, however you're listening or re-listening throughout the world. My name's James Evan Pilato, and this is the one and only MediaMonarchy.com, episode 167. It's the 23rd of April, 2010, and we're coming to you live, as always, every Friday morning at 10 a.m., live on the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org. Also, simulcasting, very much live, zeropointradio.com, worldwide, as well as 92.3 FM and 1670 AM in Casper, Wyoming, revereradio.net, the worldwide home of free speech, and laughlinradio.com, all broadcasting MediaMonarchy.com live. And of course, thanks to Free Radio Olympia, frolympia.org, 98.5 FM, Berkeley Liberation Radio.net on 104.1 FM, phantomradio.org in Boulder, Colorado on 93.9, oneskyradio.com in Kisilov, Alaska, rebroadcasting Media Monarchy on KWMD 90.7 FM, 87.9 FM in Canton, Georgia, thanks to Ground Zero Radio, stickam.com/Ground Zero Radio. Glenn from right here at CascadiaPublicRadio.org. And a huge thanks to my man Jeff at Radio23.org. Not only do they supply you the high-quality feeds from Media Monarchy suitable for rebroadcast, if you want to pick up the show, you don't even have to ask, my friends. It's all public domain as far as I'm concerned. We just want to get information out. Open source intelligence. Radio 23 is celebrating its birthday tonight on April 23rd. And I'm very proud to be a part of a roundtable discussion on the future of community radio. A huge birthday party and event. DJs, bands, discussions, networking. That's what it's all about. I'm going to be on there tonight, live, 7 p.m. Pacific time, on the new Cascade Community Radio, the new third channel on radio23.org. So more on that as that develops, and of course, I'll bring you a recording to help promote and tie in with all the great things that have been going on here in the community radio scene. You can make contact with me quite easily, facebook.com/Media Monarchy, and the same with MySpace, Twitter, YouTube, Yahoo, Gmail, Skype, Instant Messenger, iTunes, RadioForAll.net, and Archive.org, all with Media Monarchy as the username or keyword. There is so very much earth-shattering news and changes going on in the world that there's, again, I can't do it justice. I try and I do my best for you. I'm a one-man band here at MediaMonarchy.com, running the website for nearly 5 years, the radio show for nearly four. And again, thanks to Portland Radio Authority for giving me the home to do this. If you're a new listener, I welcome you with open arms, and of course, huge thanks to returning listeners who help spread the word about the site and show. Big thanks to my man Jeff from TragedyAndHope.com. We've been in contact for probably years now. We had a nice Skype conversation the other day, and it was nice to finally make that connection. Thanks to Wendy Warren as well. And a huge thanks to my man Shane on CJSF.ca. CJSF.ca at 90.1 FM in Vancouver, British Columbia. Broadcasting The New World Next Week, the audio version of my weekly video series with James Corbett of CorbettReport.com. That's what it's all about, making the redundancies, making all of this media and open source intelligence more than available. You can't watch a video, here's the audio version of it. You can't listen to the podcast, here's the website. Here are the links, here's the documentation. I try and give you the text and the context and perhaps most importantly the subtext to all that's going on in the world stage. And again, as I said, welcome new listeners. I sometimes feel compelled to reiterate things because my hope is that, of course, we're getting new listeners all the time. But then I worry that I bore longtime listeners. But just quickly, I'll say we're nonpartisan here. Both sides of the phony bird completely corrupt. And as we've seen, anytime there's a kind of real grassroots movement, it gets co-opted by the establishment, misdirected, redirected, run into the ground. One party's in favor, one party's out of favor. When your team's winning, you go to sleep. Then the other side gets energized, and suddenly the other side that couldn't see all the same crimes going on under their preferred puppet president, oh, they're now eyes wide open when it's the other guy. That and so much more, my friends. Let's glance at Google News quickly. Obama slams Arizona immigration bill. We're going to get into that, how it ties in with the birther meme, but how it, of course, directly ties into what we said on this show several weeks ago was going to be coming next, and that's going to be the immigration push, which, of course, contains the proposed legislation from Schumer and Graham. National biometric worker ID card. Ah, not just for illegals. It's for you too. And me. And everybody who, you know, wants to work. We learned late last night, senior SEC staffers spent hours at work looking at porn. Or diddling while Rome burns, if you will. Sarah Palin visiting Eugene, Oregon tonight. Sarah Palin visits liberal Oregon stronghold. Again, the phony left-right paradigm is one of the main things we seek to expose and destroy on Media Monarchy. Inspectors found negligence at West Virginia mine months before blast. That's no surprise. And again, my friends, let me remind you to please check out and spread my recent interview with Reverend Billy of the Church of Life After Shopping, talking about the banksters and mountaintop revival in my home state of West Virginia. We also have some strange new fungal viral outbreak happening in the Pacific Northwest. We'll get to that in just a little bit. But the way we're going to get right into the news now, now that we've taken care of all that business, my friends, we're going to hit the 422 news purge. My Mercury's in retrograde. New listeners, I'll tell you, I post up on MediaMonarchy.com what I call a news purge. All the news that I've collected through the week that I can't post up with the full text of articles. Again, it's just the collection, the data dump, and lay it all out for you there. Putting it on the record. So let's start with 9/11 updates. Bin Laden's Facebook page shut down. A Facebook account in the name of Emmanuel Goldstein, the boogeyman that doesn't exist, a.k.a. Tim Osman, a.k.a. Osama bin Laden, shut down last Friday after attracting more than 1,000 fans and posting the speeches and recordings of Islamic extremists produced by Al-Qaeda affiliate Al-Sahab Media Group. Of course, the guys who can put out tons of videos, somehow we just can't track them. Although video experts have said that the Terror logo was laid down on the same video layer as the feds that, quote-unquote, discover it. Neil Krawitz was the guy who came out and said that. Then, of course, came out and retracted it quickly once the story had already gone viral. But we all know that the Al Ciaita boogeymen, they were created by the intelligence networks in the late 70s during the Cold War with the same band of insane eugenical control freaks like Brzezinski and Robert Gates still running the massive war ops on the grand chessboard. And even a little bit more about Emmanuel Goldstein from OttawaCitizen.com. Osama tried for satellite link to watch 9/11 from his hideout. As you've probably no doubt heard the speculation of George Bush watching a special feed of the first plane hit on the morning of 9/11. I find that to be speculative, red herring kind of information. And again, we're wholeheartedly, proudly 9/11 truth here on Media Monarchy. We just don't worship at the Church of Controlled Demolition. We've always been more interested in the drills and the stand downs, the infiltrations, the tracking, the visas. The last 9/11 update comes with a clip, my friends. Willie Nelson talks 9/11 truth on Larry King Live.
Willie took part in a great benefit for 9/11 victims and their families. He sang America the Beautiful. I don't think anyone ever sang it better. But he's questioned the official story. What prompted you to look into this from another angle?
Well, I'm just logic. I've seen buildings implode before. I just saw the Texas Stadium implode just a couple of days ago. And these two buildings imploded. And the one next to it, where nothing hit it, no plane hit the one next to it, it just decided to fall on its own. So naturally, I have questions about how
that something
happened.
Was done inside?
Yes.
Right. But I'm told that the reason it imploded was so much heat from above and so much fuel on the jets that caused it to go down rather than go over.
Never before has a building collapsed because it was hit by an airplane, a steel building. Never before.
Now, has any building been hit by a 747, though?
I'm sure they have.
So you think there was something going on inside the building?
Well, I just question the whole thing. I question the story. I question the implosions. It just looks too simple, you know.
Well, others have questioned it, too, although there was an investigation.
There was an investigation, and I think there should be more.
There was an investigation that, of course, the commissioners came out later and said that they were set up to fail and that they were being stonewalled by the intelligence agencies, thanks in no small part to Zelikow. But let's keep moving, my friends, on to the latest BioWars EnviroHealth updates. The Iceland volcano eruption will have no impact on weather or climate. The erupting volcano in Iceland won't have a lasting effect on the climate, experts say. You mess with Iceland, we shut down all your airports, goes a new joke being told in the tiny country. Yet, while the erupting, name of which I will not even attempt to pronounce, volcano, managed to ground most of Europe's airlines for nearly a week, the giant cloud of ash, impressive as it may look, won't affect the weather, much less the climate. Experts have said the volcano is emitting 300,000 tons of carbon dioxide emissions per day. While this puts it in the league of a small to medium European economy, it's tiny compared with overall man-made emissions. Man-made global warming is a scam being pulled on you, and the people who cause the problems and shelve the technologies are now pointing the finger at you and have a whole batch of carbon taxes and austerity measures coming your way. The green police will live inside of your head. Even if you believe in man-made global warming, what difference is it going to make paying carbon indulgences to JP Morgan and Al Gore and all the firms that are set up to take your carbon indulgences? Be the change that you want to see in the world. And of course, carbon dioxide is plant food. Ash-triggered flight disruptions cost airlines $1.7 billion, and that's several days old. However, much closer to home, a rare Yellowstone volcano eruption would be deadly. And a great way to celebrate Earth Day, oil slick spreads from sunken rig off the Mexican coast. 6.3 magnitude quake strikes Papua New Guinea. California man indicted for anthrax threat. Anthrax outbreak in Bangladesh. Stephen Hatfill, falsely accused anthrax doctor, speaks out. Four-star general, that's former drug czar. So you know he's trustworthy. Barry McCaffrey says the U.S. will be attacked by a bioweapon in the next decade. Army investigators call for increased safety procedures at labs. And all those previous several articles all come from bioprepwatch.com. Alternet goes into the widespread psychiatric drugging of infants and toddlers. All on point, except for the part where they call it an American phenomenon. The things that we see and the stories that we discuss, whether we're talking about Southeast Portland, Oregon, or Iceland, or wherever in between, they're all connected. And again, talking about nonpartisanship, the phony left-right paradigm. It's how they use us. It's how they get us to tear each other apart. The anarchists versus the Tea Party versus black versus white versus liberal versus conservative. But it is the banksters versus us. It's the multi-generational serial killer families, the bloodlines, the corporations, and the secret societies and their roundtables and their think tanks and their front groups and their cutouts. Running the same game they have been running now for quite some time. And again, the story isn't new. It just seems relatively new for our relatively young country. Flu shots suspended after Australian kids hospitalized. And lastly, on the BioWars Enviro Health, China to sterilize 10,000+ detained parents over one-child policy violations. Do a little bit of research into China, into their most favored nation status. They are the model for the New World Order. That isn't new. Kissinger, Poppy Bush, tie into China and the one-child eugenics policy. And as the racial lines and class lines start to rise and rise and rise here in the States, a lot of folks so quick to talk about who's having too many kids, who shouldn't be having kids. Up next is the massive, massive, disgustingly long list of EconoCrash updates for our new financial world order. Massive government corruption hidden by this current focus on Goldman Sachs. As the country's attention is directed to the Goldman Sachs scandals, a much greater story lurks beneath the surface involving massive government corruption that makes Wall Street firms pale in comparison. The current government of the U.S. under Barry Satoro and the Democrat-controlled Congress is the single most corrupt entity in the nation, worse than all the private sector scandals combined. One would be hard-pressed to find an era of U.S. history when government was any more corrupt than it is at present. Now, that's arguable. But it's on down the slippery slope. Senator Chris Dodd, Democrat of Connecticut, who's already announced he won't run again. He's putting his finishing moves on his work for his globalist central bankster masters. He was one of the main players in the Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac countrywide mortgage fiasco, accepting sweet deals from the mortgage giants while carefully covering up any problem in the subprime mortgage sector, and then being among the first to push the massive taxpayer-funded bailouts after the crisis hits. And now, my friends, it just so happens that Dodd is also one of the main players in Congress pushing for new sweeping government regulations of the nation's financial sector, a move that the GOP has now demanded to see records of SEC contacts with Dodd, congressional Democrats, the White House, the DNC, and the NYT. That's the New York Times. But who is regulating government? The article goes on, but unfortunately, we know the answer to that question. And this new round of legislation and unlimited bankster bailouts being brought to us by frontmen like Christopher Dodd. This is going to be huge, but it's going to get half the attention that the healthcare situation got just several weeks ago. And it gets worse and worse and worse. We, of course, noted last week in the breaking news segment that the Securities and Exchange Commission has formally charged Goldman Sachs with fraud. But before we go celebrating, it's not criminal. They're civil charges. And we're just going to see projections onto the things we're supposed to pay attention to. The shadows on the wall in the cave. While massive movements go on beneath the surface, behind the curtain of the world stage shell game. Goldman's White House connections raise eyebrows. That is a massive report from McClatchy. We noted, again, in my interview with Reverend Billy, Jamie Dimon, no stranger to the White House and Obama. They gave him the most of anyone during the 08 campaign, and I believe the most that had ever been given to a presidential candidate, Goldman Sachs to Obama. Goldman Sachs taps former Obama White House counsel Gregory Craig, who's also connected to Skadden Arps. And again, I would point you to the work of Richard Andrew Grove in the new documentary 2020 Hindsight, Censorship on the Frontline, available exclusively through just a handful of sites like CorbettReport.com, GnosticMedia.com, Maria.net, and yours truly at MediaMonarchy.com. A $10 donation gets you the amazing 2020 Hindsight DVD, the donate PayPal button all up at the top right of MediaMonarchy.com. Goldman Sachs eats its young. We have more on the Dodd bill. Representative Brad Sherman noting that, quote, the Dodd bill has unlimited executive bailout authority. And from the Associated Press, the first article I saw, and now what has ballooned into a huge story, ramping up attacks on the SEC over porn surfing. So perhaps if homosexuals cause earthquakes and volcano eruptions, I guess porn caused the new financial world order. The economiccollapseblog.com goes into America's crumbling infrastructure, and that's the physical underpinning, the bridges that we see falling apart. And it's only going to get worse. So to restore our economy, are they going to put people to work on things like that? No, we're going to have nanny state, snitch police, green shirts. Again, from the Economic Collapse blog, asking the question, if the U.S. economy goes into the toilet, will it result in complete and total collapse of society? I don't think we're there yet. Again, this is all the frog boil. Slowly turning up the heat. Like that poster of stormtroopers marching down a city street. It says fascism. Do you really think it's going to be this obvious? It's the slow, incremental desensitization. We may fight something back, but their agenda goes far and wide. And it seems like we can only fight it off before they beat us in the war of attrition. Because, of course, we all have to work multiple jobs, and our food is poison, and we're all glued to American Idol and a bunch of pop culture bullshit. Mitch McConnell's Wall Street ties called out by his hometown newspaper. More on that from Raw Story. IRS shifted $63 million away from unemployment benefits. Someone who should know, Elliot Spitzer says, there are no coincidences in this world. None. Relating, of course, to the SEC charging Goldman with fraud just as this new bill is coming up. Obama acting like he's getting tough with the banksters. It's a dog and pony show. And on around the world, the longest sentence ever imposed for bribing foreign officials. More on that from allgov.com. Greece begins rescue talks with EU and IMF. That's from the Telegraph. And another note on that in just a moment. Florida man accused in $900 million New Jersey Ponzi scheme. And speaking of Ponzi schemes, the SEC lawyer who refused to investigate Alan Stanford's Ponzi scheme, he then represented Alan Stanford. See how that works? Geithner okays movie futures after Senate committee bans it. That would be betting on the success of movie tickets. That's how far we've come. Apple says their profits have risen 90% on iPhone sales alone. U.S. Treasury unveils new $100 note. Reports from Wikinews as well as Vanity Fair, where they note America's new $100 bill might as well be a euro. And in other news, deck chairs rearranged on Titanic. But then it's back to the enforcement arm of the private Federal Reserve. IRS agent didn't report $41,000+ in eBay sales. 75% of the U.S. still blames Bush for the economy. But I believe they're starting to wake up. The war of terror wasn't created with Bush. The new financial world order wasn't created by Obama. They pass the football off to each other. They never investigate. They always pardon the previous puppet and say, we need to move forward. We shouldn't look back and get bogged down in partisan politics. I guess that was my Clinton voice. But you get the idea. Checks and cash slowly but surely disappearing. That reminds me, I believe a month or two ago, the cover story Wired magazine about the new money. They ran the letters column for that issue in the current issue, and pretty much everybody that wrote in said, as soon as they get us to go cashless and all we have are credits and zeros and ones and chips, they will have the switch to turn you off. There's a no-fly list. There's a no-work list coming. And you can bet your ass there will be a no-funny-money credits, Amero, call it what you will, currency on-off switch. The last note is a great piece from Max Kaiser and Alex Jones on the globalist takeover by way of Press TV out of Iran. They gave Max Kaiser a new show, which is fantastic. And now we get into the geopolitics. On an interesting note from allgov.com, America's popularity throughout the world has risen over the past year, according to the BBC's World Service poll. While not the most popular nation on the block, the U.S. has nonetheless lowered its negative ratings by 9 points and boosted its favorable ratings by 4 points. Overall, 46% of global respondents now say the U.S. has a positive influence in the world, while 34% believe America still has a negative impact. Some populations continue to hold a very negative view of the U.S., including Turkey, Pakistan, Russia, Mexico, and Germany. Germany has the highest favorable rating in the world, followed by Japan, the U.K., Canada, and France. But some of these countries aren't as popular as they once were, with the U.K. and Japan experiencing 3-point declines and Canada 6 points. However, none of these Western nations have to worry about falling to the bottom. The world's most negatively viewed state is, oh, can you guess? That's right, it's Iran. Followed by Pakistan, North Korea, Israel, and Russia. put in a new smiling puppet, give a facelift to the New World Order, however the agendas of bankruptcy and wars of aggression and loss of liberties at home continues unabated, regardless of which puppet is in power and whether there's an R or a D after their name. Think of it as, you know, R&D, like research and development. They go hand in hand. U.S. to end military operations in Haiti on June 1st. That's right, my friends. We can only help you for a few weeks, but we can kill you forever. The row between U.S. and Azerbaijan grows with the cancellation of a terror drill. We have a lot more on terror drills worldwide a little later in the show. Iran lashes out at U.S. during a Tehran nuclear summit. And a few bits of updates on the Polish plane crash that, of course, killed the president and I believe 97 others. A piece from Huffington Post says the Polish president's pilots knew the plane was doomed, found the black box recorders, which, of course, as we always find the black box recorders, except on 9/11. Interesting crash site footage. And apparently the guy who shot it is now dead. Accidental, I'm sure. And a great video from Jane Burgermeister, Polish Plane Crash Truth. Poetic justice, I suppose, but we don't like to take glee in anyone's destruction, even if it is self-inflicted. The IDF is shooting blanks. Impotence caused by depleted uranium? Question mark. That's from my man Jeffrey Long at Redacted News. Would the U.S. shoot down an Israeli jet? Top officer won't say. Let's hit this link over to Danger Room because this, of course, caught my eye. Dateline, Morgantown, West Virginia. In a town hall on the campus of WVU, a young Air Force ROTC cadet asked Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Admiral Mike Mullen, to respond to a rumor. If Israel decided to attack Iran, the speculation went those jets would need to fly through Iraqi airspace to reach their targets. That airspace is considered a no-fly zone by the American military. So might U.S. troops shoot down Israeli jets? The airman asked the chairman. Mullen tried to sidestep. We have an exceptionally strong relationship with Israel, yada, yada, yada. The cadet followed up. Would an airman like me ever be ordered to fire on an Israeli aircraft or personnel? Again, sidestep. Fascinating question coming from my home state. And one need only look into the story of the USS Liberty to find the answer, or at least perhaps the opposite question. Would Israelis fire on us in a false flag attempt to blame Egypt in 1967 in the attack of the USS Liberty? IndianExpress.com has brick, must create a new world order. There's that phrase again. If we say it, we're kooks. However, the families and the misleaders, they can use it and it's a good thing. And, of course, you should know that BRIC is Brazil, Russia, India, China. Suppose insert pun about a brick through the Western windows could be inserted here. Kyrgyzstan authorities authorized deadly force on wave of riots and looting. We noted Greece now succumbing to talks and begging for bailout money after it's been brought to its knees. Greece has welcomed their new IMF overlords with a day of rioting and national strikes. More on that from ZeroHedge.com. U.S. warns of possible attacks in New Delhi. Human torpedoes blamed for Korea ship strike. And Iran guards start three-day military exercise. More terror drills worldwide. A couple of history mystery notes, or perhaps just one with a nice little supplemental piece to help put it in its proper context, from The Telegraph. Benazir Bhutto left to the mercy of assassins by security chief. The former Pakistan Prime Minister Benazir Bhutto was left to the mercy of her assassins by her security chief, who abandoned her in the minutes before her death. A key witness has told the UN inquiry into her death. The supplemental piece, to kind of put this into a bit of perspective, we reference often Lieutenant Colonel L. Fletcher Prouty. Prouty.org, P-R-O-U-T-Y. You may know him as Donald Sutherland, as X in JFK. High-level military man who knew how things worked. And he notes, and I've got a little video for you, with Prouty on the JFK motorcade and no protection, that ultimately that's all that needs to happen. If you can strip away the standard operating procedure of protection, well then, you can have a crossfire. On to the media memes. South Park censored after warning from U.S. Islamists. After a warning from Brooklyn-based Islamist group, Comedy Central decided to censor last night's episode of South Park over concerns about further offending Muslims by featuring a satirical representation of Muhammad. Following last week's episode, the cartoon rendering of the prophet appeared with his body obscured by a black box and the name Muhammad was bleeped out, the AP reported. Muslims consider any representation of the founder of their religion to be blasphemous. Just kind of difficult. You gotta give it to Trey Parker and Matt Stone. Equal opportunity satirists, and the fact that they're able to produce shows so quickly keeps it amazingly timely. So, essentially, those guys have been threatened with death and said, you're going to end up like Theo Van Gogh, who was, of course, murdered. Muslim group warned South Park. More on that from the New York Times. American Idol and the hypocrisy of corporate charity. A great piece from NewsJunkiePost.com. Apparently, Obama and Michelle introduced American Idol the other night as part of some fundraiser that, of course, ties in all the multinational conglomerate corporations that have been killing us for generations. Coca-Cola, their work with the Nazis, and on and on. Seven people types warned not to watch 3D TV. More on that from the Huffington Post. And then, of course, people who have vision difficulties. And again, seven things. The last media meme note is a great one. And it's a longer clip. And I just have the pertinent part in the middle. But to get the full effect, of course, you got to jump over to 911blogger.com. Luke Radowski get Stephen Colbert to mention the Bilderberg Group.
You know, after the conversation I had with Stephen, he goes and sits down and he does his new segment. And in the middle of his new segment, he just goes off and says,
Marty, thank you for joining us. I just want to thank you for the welcome you just gave me. And I just want to say that anybody out there watching, that if you're in the secret Bilderberg Group... assassinate freelance reporters. It's just not nice, guys. It's not nice. And please, call me. Call me.
You owe me one, buddy.
Okay. Now, they gotta go through me.
I was extremely excited to see Steven actually mention it on his news program, and I really want to thank him because that reached out to millions and millions of people who never heard about the Bilderberg Group on live on his show. And I want to thank him for his courage for actually bringing that issue up to everybody.
The Bilderberg Group, of course, as we noted last week, will be meeting this year in Spain. Bilderberg Group set up nearly 50 plus years ago by Prince Bernhard of the Netherlands. Again, the families, the societies, the bloodlines, if you will, meet in secret to ultimately decide world events. And that's how it goes up and down the pyramid. Then they disseminate the action reports, if you will, the talking points, the agendas, to the next level, which ties in with the Council on Foreign Relations, the Royal Institute of International Affairs, and on down through the Mockingbird corporate media. On to a little bit of murder and mayhem, which I am thankful that we have not seen that much in the past week. As we noted last week, of course, we have been through the dark time in the year. We're right around 420 every year. We seem to have massive homegrown terror events like Waco and Ruby Ridge and Oklahoma City and Columbine and Virginia Tech and Patriots Day and Hitler's birthday and Earth Day and all those things in the pop culture world. Surveillance video shows violent iPad theft at Denver Mall. Denver police released shocking surveillance video Tuesday of a thief stealing a brand new iPad from a man in the Cherry Creek Mall, ripping off his left pinky finger in the process. Police say Tennessee hospital shooter mentally ill and had a grudge. That, of course, did happen on 419, the OKC anniversary day. As well, this Dallas cabbie fatally shot, two hurt, gunman sought. And now we're on to our two favorite puppet peas in a pod, Obamasiah and the Apostles of War. Obama gladly embraces Bush's anti-terror powers, regardless of the rhetorical attacks Republicans have lobbed at him for being soft on terror. Obama is continuing much in his predecessor's policies and strategies for the war of terror, argues Eli Lake at Reason.com. Sure, Obama allowed the FBI to read the Christmas Day airline bomber Mutalab his constitutional rights. We, of course, have completely debunked that story and his well-dressed handlers. His attorney general, Eric Holder, said he wanted to try 9/11 mastermind KSM in a New York criminal courtroom, but there are many decisions by Obama that are in line with the 914 presidency, named after the legislative powers Congress granted to Bush 3 days after 9/11. So quoting Eli Lake, writing for Reason.com, quote, "When it comes to the legal framework for confronting terrorism, Obama is acting in no meaningful sense any different than Bush after 06, when the Supreme Court overturned the view that the president's wartime powers were effectively unlimited. As the Obama administration itself was quick to point out, Bush administration also tried terrorists apprehended on U.S. soil in criminal courts, most notably 20th hijacker Moussaoui and shoe bomber Richard Reid. More important, Obama has embraced and at times defended the same expansive view of a global war against al-Qaeda as President Bush. The Obama administration has also embraced the plan to hold suspected terrorists indefinitely without charge, try them via military tribunal, keep them in prison even if they're acquitted, and kill them in foreign countries with which America is not formally at war, including Yemen, Somalia, Pakistan, and on and on. And just like all those things that they say is for those evil, dirty terrorists, it's for you and me. Obama is repaying his masters at Goldman Sachs, and again, as we talk about the next coming wave of austerity and economy-crushing taxes and new unlimited bailouts from Dodd and Obama and the rest of the gangster banksters, you're going to see the banks acting like they're against this Dodd bill, just as we saw the insurance companies acting like they were against Obamacare. Oh, please don't throw me into the briar patch. Obama and Dodd pushing a sneaky Wall Street bailout. That's from humanevents.com. Missouri representative mistakenly refers to the Soviet Union in his anti-Obama space policy press release, Todd Aiken. And again, the birther meme that we noted in the breaking news segment at the top of the show from CanadaFreePress.com. DC knows that Obama's ineligible for office. But let's jump over to the George Soros-funded left cover website, thinkprogress.org. Arizona legislature demands immigrants and U.S. presidents verify their status. That would be the headline we noted Obama slams Arizona immigration bill, which is still right now on the top of Google News as I speak to you live Friday, April 23rd, 2010. The last note on that, by way of overall story, Republican behind Georgia birther bill denies that he's a birther. And again, we've spent some time on the birther issue, never really coming down on one side or the other. It's another great cultural grenade that we can all throw back and forth, that we can speculate about forever. If it would come out that he wasn't born here, we would rush headlong to change the Constitution overnight so we can have people like washed-up son of a Nazi, people like Schwarzenegger as president. But let's hit some Oregon oddities, my friends, and a little bit of good news by way of Willamette Week. Portland Police Union boss resigns. As predicted, Portland Police Association President Sergeant Scott Westerman resigned his post effective June 19th. Westerman cited the two reported road rage incidents in January as the reason for his decision. Of course, the Portland police not being seen in a very good light, not only in Portland, but also being seen by the rest of the Pacific Northwest and anyone else in the world who follows these stories. And you can follow basically the implosion as they also puff up and become more aggressive and brutal. The police are being federalized. They're taking all that federal money, all tied in with Reichland security. More gear. More less than lethal weapons. And of course, when they should usually do nothing, they tase you, and in situations where they should probably use a taser, they'll just kill you. Police chiefs around the nation resigning for various reasons. And on a different note, we reference this as well, killer fungus seen in Pacific Northwest. A rare but life-threatening tropical fungus that causes lung infections in both people and animals has been seen in the Pacific Northwest and could spread. The fungus, known as Cryptococcus gatti, or C. gatti, has infected dozens of humans and animals, including dogs, cats, dolphins, in Washington and Oregon in the past 5 years. Unfortunately, we will probably have to return to this story in the future. In just a little bit of research I was able to do about it, it seems that it originates several decades back to Vancouver Island, up just off the northwest coast of Washington State. So I need to do a little bit more research, because when I hear about strange viruses and islands and outbreaks, it instantly makes me think of something like Plum Island off the coast of Rhode Island in New York State on the East Coast, where, as we've discussed many, many times, that's essentially where Lyme disease came from. Created by Lab 257. But a few more notes on Oregon oddities. My man Alex Ansari of Outside the Box, alexansari.com. He was a guest again last week on Clyde Lewis's Ground Zero on KUFO.com and ZeroPointRadio.com. We're going to get to that in just a little bit on the Star Strangled Banter. Alex has been getting, I would say, kind of brave. And I worry about a little bit of the finger-pointing, but Alex has been working hard at bullhorning and exposing and putting up tons of video and work from here in Portland, exposing the Tea Party, the Black Bloc, the police standoffs, all of those things, but stepping it up even more. And again, this is what it's all about, and I love being connected and affiliated to folks like Clyde Lewis or James Corbett or Richard Grove or Alex Ansari. Their work constantly makes me want to work harder in spreading this information. And again, we don't want a revolution, we want a revelation. It's an information war. As we're going to hear later, they want us to go violent. That's what they need. That's why they put provocateurs into groups to cause violence, so that then they can justify the police state crackdown. Alex Ansari spoke and testified in person April 21st to the Portland City Council, warning them of what's to come.
Of Alex Ansari to address council regarding increased military, naval, and homeland security presence in the city.
Good morning. Welcome to the City Council chambers. My name is Alex Ansari. Good morning, Mayor Adams and members of the council. I'm here today to share my concerns for the safety and security of Portland in light of the direction that our nation is going at this time. In a YouTube.com video posted in January 2009, Mayor Adams said, and I quote, "I know I made big mistakes and I ask you for your forgiveness. I pledge to you, I will work harder than I have ever worked before to make sure Portland meets its challenges." And I'm glad to hear you say that, because that's why I'm here. I'm here to discuss some of those challenges that I feel that our city is going to be facing in the future, such as the federal takeover of our beloved city when a certain type of national disaster or state of emergency is declared by the executive branch of the U.S. government. Time does not allow me to document already what has been proved to be facts, such as numerous reports of hundreds of thousands of U.S. troops incrementally being redeployed to operate under the command of NORTHCOM in the event of civil unrest. What time does allow is the point to be made that although your predecessor, Tom Potter, is no longer the mayor, the clandestine plans for continuity of government in Portland remain firmly intact. Top Off 4 stands for Top Officials 4. This was the huge federally funded anti-terror drill that took place in our city between October 15th and the 19th, 2007. On the surface, officials story, this was a simulated joint response to a terrorist dirty bomb attack, capitalizing on the fear generated by the events of 9/11. The same day that our government is used to justify the deaths of well over 1.4 million innocent people in Iraq and Afghanistan. In reality, it was another example of a taxpayer-funded exercise in the millions, where multiple alphabet soup agencies of the U.S. government, including the CIA and DOD and FBI, practiced directing the city of Portland's emergency response. At a press conference at PIR, Governor of Oregon, Ted Kulongoski jokingly said in a statement posted on Willamette Week's YouTube channel, "But this has been a great exercise for me. I'm actually going to fall into a trap and something serious is going to happen to me, and I'll have to trigger the succession clause of the Constitution, who becomes the governor in a time of emergency. I've been told the only thing I have to worry about is when they start putting the rubber gloves on." That's a quote from our governor. Moving forward to late 2008, Oregon Representative Peter DeFazio voiced his concerns about the real plans for continuity of government before the House floor in Congress. DeFazio protested the fact that as a member of the Homeland Security Committee, he was not allowed to see the plans, raising concerns that perhaps this was because of what truly lies in those plans, something that the public would find alarming. Portland, Oregon also had black helicopters swarming on Monday, August 25th, 2008, which alarmed people that didn't know what was going on, and the former mayor authorized live fire and live rope insertion and other things. In conclusion, I ask the city council to stand with the people, not the federal government, because you may very well be the city council when this hits the fan. And so I ask you to stand with the Bill of Rights and Constitution and be very, very careful about what money you take from the federal government, because that money comes with strings attached. Thank you. Thank you for your testimony, sir.
Bravo. Alex Ansari speaking on April 21st before the Portland City Council, warning them of what seems to be coming down the road. We've also got links to the transcript of his full prepared statement. We've also got an alternate video that shows reaction shots of our mayor, Sam Adams, when Alex mentions things like 9/11 being the blank check for wars of aggression and killing millions worldwide. Sam Adams rolls his eyes. Quickly now, the last section on this massive 422 news purge, my Mercury's in retrograde. It's the war horrors. Families of 22 Americans killed in Afghanistan demand investigation of generals. This from allgov.com. Upset over the military's unwillingness to punish higher-ranking officers for alleged mistakes, the families of 22 U.S. personnel killed in action in Afghanistan are demanding the Army, Navy, and Marine Corps provide more accountability for the decisions of generals who put the service members in harm's way. Those killed were involved in three separate but eerily similar battles in Afghanistan, according to the Military Times, in which, quote, units were put in indefensible positions or left without sufficient support when attacked by overwhelming forces. And on down the list. veteran commits suicide in front of a Dayton, Ohio VA center. Don't ask. Air Force discharges lesbian officer. Hip-hop protest soldier discharged. All those still coming from allgov.com, and we'll return to that hip-hop protest soldier in just a second. New documents reveal military recruiter misconduct. Surprise, surprise. More on that from Raw Story and Raw Replay. National Guard recruiters forged reenlistment papers. Little tiny bits of good news. Feds indict ex-Blackwater President Gary Jackson. Secret U.S. memo urges war on Iran. Again, the country that has opened all their plants up to inspection. They've signed the non-proliferation treaty. But meanwhile, those other rogue states who have an undeclared amount of hundreds of nuclear warheads won't debate, won't come to nuclear conferences, won't sign the NPT treaty. But Iran's the enemy. We already heard it from the BBC poll. Air Force looks for core algorithms of human thought, and even more, seeing tongue, spray on skin, transplanted hands, encounters with the military's extreme medicine wing. We have a nice little clip of Big Mouth Biden announcing the death of two Al-Qaeda in Iraq leaders, but breaking it down and giving you the subtext. Al-Qaeda chiefs in Iraq captured, killed, never actually existed, recaptured now, killed again. Israel unveils world's largest drone, the size of a 737, thanks probably in no small part to American taxpayers. Volcanic cloud disrupts military operations, and a great documentary from 1983, I had never heard of this before, by way of countercurrents.org, Anybody's Son Will Do. But let's return as we take our top of the hour break here. Army Specialist Mark Hall will not undergo a court-martial trial and instead has been released from his military service. Hall, a.k.a. hip-hop artist Mark Waterkus, was arrested in December after he refused to be sent back to Iraq and produced a rap song with inflammatory lyrics to protest the Army's stop-loss policy.
NBC News in depth tonight, back to the front. The number of U.S. soldiers who've had their Iraq military service involuntarily extended under the so-called stop-loss policy is at its highest since the start of the war. That's despite a Pentagon pledge last year to cut back on its use. NBC's Jim Mikulaszewski takes a look at the effect of this controversial policy.
As Sergeant David White was preparing to wrap up his military career last year, he was stunned when the Army refused to let him go.
I was just in disbelief. I did not think that something like that could happen to me.
Instead, White was sent to Iraq for his second combat tour, leaving wife Crystal and newborn Eva behind. What the Army did is slap White with a stop loss, which allows the Army to extend the soldier's enlistment, like it or not.
Yeah, I did a good thing. I'm back from Iraq. I served my country. The only thing on my mind right now is to get down and serve big time with family. What a house, man, rocking the fruits of my labor. That 14 months of Iraq behavior. Better earth stay alive. Shoot that fucking paper. No doubt I was making that Iraq paper. Now I'm ready to get on out. Become a civilian again and get on out. No car payments, house all decked out. So I'm set to motherfuckers scream and shout. But success got cost, the army got forced. Telling me a nigga like me is stop lost. That means I can't get out, my salad got tossed. They fucked me over like a mob boss, high horse.
58,000 soldiers have been stop lost in the past 6 years. Their service involuntarily extended from a few months to more than a year.
You felt like, there's really nothing you can do, there's nothing you can do about it.
Stuart McKenzie's stop loss not only cost him his time, it nearly cost him his life.
It looks like the army wants a war. They want to fuck with a force they never felt before. You can't stop the unstoppable. That's Warnock's law. So I'm fighting for the greatest cause. When there's a will, there's a way. So don't tell me, hey, that's life, motherfucker, because you can't get sprayed. Warnock's behave. Nah, this is real days. When shit hit the airwaves and somebody gotta say, fuck you, colonels, captains E7 above. You think you're so much bigger than I am? I've been too good of American. This stop, law, stop movement got me chasing fast in. If I do drugs, I'll get kicked out. But if my time is up, I can't get out. So the good die young, I heard it out your mouth. So fuck the army and everything you all about.
Army surgeons reattach McKenzie's hand, which now gives him limited use. To this day, McKenzie blames the stop loss. The Army says it uses stop loss to keep soldiers who reach the end of enlistment from leaving the battlefield in the middle of the combat tour.
Like Obama said, somebody be held responsible, but some of y'all gonna be held in hospitals, whatever possible, to pursue my own journeys in life through my own made obstacles. Since I can't pinpoint the cope of beef, they want me, cause misery loves company. I'm gonna round them up all, eventually, easily, walk right up peacefully, and surprise them all. Yes, yes, y'all, up against the wall, turn around, I got a motherfucking magazine with 30 rounds, on that 3-round burst, ready to fire down. Still against the wall, I grab my M4, spray and watch all the bodies hit the floor. I bet you never stop, lost nobody no more. In your next lifetime, of course, no remorse. Yeah, you don't stop. Yo, the Army is the only military branch that still got this stop loss in effect. So only thing I gotta say is prepare for the consequences. When people wanna get out, let them get out.
They don't like it any better than I do, but it has proven necessary in order to maintain the force.
But many lawmakers and critics claim the Army has used stop loss as a backdoor draft to make up for the shortage of soldiers for the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan.
It is going to destroy the morale of our troops. We've got to stop it.
Stop loss from Mark Waterkus, a well-produced protest song. And now we're into hour number two, my friends, of episode 167 of Media Monarchy. It's April 23rd, 2010, and my name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com. Coming to you live, as always, from the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org, and of course, our long and growing fine list of affiliates who broadcast or rebroadcast Media Monarchy. Of course, implore you to subscribe. feeds.feedburner.com/Media Monarchy. Put it in your Google Reader, put it in your iTunes, you will get all the articles, all the audio, all the video, everything. So we already mentioned my man Clyde Lewis of Ground Zero Lounge fame, now picked up by KUFO.com, 101.1 FM right here in Portland, Oregon, blasting out 50,000 plus watts every Sunday night. GroundZeroMedia.org. I, of course, mentioned Alex Ansari was the guest on last Sunday's show. And we always post up the accompanying article each week that provides the background and the basis for each episode of Ground Zero. Of course, available exclusively from ZeroPointRadio.com. Support Ground Zero. Support ZeroPointRadio.com. Purchase the episodes. Spread the word. We all need support to keep doing what we're doing. Star Strangled Banter is the name of the latest article from Clyde Lewis on GroundZeroMedia.org. Reading briefly, America has now been devalued. Prepare yourself for divisions of philosophies and the encouraged discontent to provoke a clash. There will be rebellions, total strikes, transportation halts, and mass terror attacks from Americans that are worried about the future. Can you imagine food riots, gas wars, and mass arrests at rallies and protests because of the info and actions that obfuscate the American people? As governments accrue more power to themselves, they seek out ways to expand and complete their control. And fear and dread secure that ideal atmosphere in which to enforce this type of mindless conformity. Prior to 9/11, the U.S. was a country that had a healthy suspicion of the policies of their government. There was investigation after investigation into wrongdoing conducted by the state, such as the Church Committee. But that was the late 70s, and here we are, 2010. Now we're being told that it's not patriotic to question those in authority. The government somehow is now synonymous with country and constitution, and the death of our constitutional rights has been encouraged by the fearful. The power of the police state will not be easily relinquished. Choose your information and your social and political friends wisely, because not everyone who rebels or commits acts of violence, bullhorns at rallies, and speaks against the government speaks the truth. Unfortunately, true, my friends. Clyde Lewis has also announced a live show. And again, I reference the Ground Zero Lounge. He used to do a live weekly performance, presentation, lecture, town hall, audience participation style from Dante's here in Portland, Oregon. He's got a show coming up at the end of May, the AC/DC God Show, getting into the bloodlines, the predictive programming, the coming, growing religious memes. So more on that as we get closer to a live event from Clyde Lewis and groundzeromedia.org. On to some of the other realms of alternative media, which I'm so proud to be connected to. The latest episode of The New World Next Week for April 22nd. NLE 10, email spying and blogging equals terror. The New World Next Week, brought to you each week by CorbettReport.com and MediaMonarchy.com, the weekly series that uncovers the subtext and gives you the context on some of the most important developments in alternative news and open source intelligence. This week, story one, why is FEMA trying to cover up national level exercise 2010? We're going to get into that in just a few minutes. Yahoo beats feds in email privacy battle. That's over on cyberspacewar.com, one of my sister sites. We're going to get into that on the B-side episode coming up this weekend. So much to go over. Couldn't do it all here this morning. Big things happening. Again, appearing live on the panel discussion tonight as part of the launch of Cascade Community Radio and the birthday of Radio23.org. But the third story we go over, and this is worth the price of admission alone, so I implore you to go get the New World Next Week videos on YouTube. Share, comment, promote, favorite, comment, like. Do it all. We're getting thousands of views each week, but we could get 1,000 more. And once you can kind of crack that front page, even within the subsections on YouTube, if you can crack that front page in news and politics, then more people and more people and more people are going to see your videos, and it's going to explode exponentially. That's what we want. That's what we need. So again, huge hat tips and thanks to my man Shane at cjsf.ca on 90.1 FM in Vancouver, BC. Going to be rebroadcasting the audio of The New World Next Week each week on his show. And you can do the same. Again, subscribe to the feeds and you'll get the audio and the video and the articles and everything. So the third story that we hit on the latest New World Next Week. Let's get a little bit of text from Steve Watson. Washington Post writer says internet journalism is sort of like terrorism. A Washington Post columnist who appeared on CBS's Face the Nation last Sunday described Tea Partiers as potentially violent and decried internet journalism as sort of like terrorism. When asked about her views on the Tea Party, host Bob Schieffer, Kathleen Parker, a Pulitzer Prize-winning commentator, declared it to be dangerous.
Someone made an interesting point to me recently in talking about how, you know, some of this really nasty rhetoric that shows up on the Internet.
Yeah.
Where you don't know who said it. There really is no accountability. The Internet being the only place, the only vehicle to deliver news that has no editor. You don't know where this stuff comes from, whether it's true or false. And this person said to me, you know, we've always had opinion that comes from various places, like during Lincoln's day, every newspaper had an editorial point of view. But this person said the difference was, in those days, you knew which paper it was coming from.
Right.
Now you don't know where some of this is coming from, and that is the added factor to the volatility of this stuff. And
yeah, it's interesting. Goes. People will say anything when they have the cloak of anonymity. It's sort of like terrorism. You know, we don't know where to aim our bombs, so we can't go after a country because there are, you know, there's no one place to focus on it. And it's the same thing with the Internet. You can't really, you don't know who to go after. And you and I'm sure you share some of the wonderful experiences I've had of being attacked and threatened and whatnot. And it feeds on itself, you know, builds, and people who are not well-grounded and who may have these more violent tendencies suddenly find a place where they can convene and find validation and even find company. And I don't know where that all leads, but it's kind of scary.
Kathleen Parker's column from that same day in the Washington Post entitled, What Americans Can Do to Discourage Future McVeighs, contains more of the same anti-government sentiment equals extremism claptrap. It's clear that, like all the rest of the establishment corporate-controlled media dinosaurs, Kathleen Parker is sort of spewing phony pre-programmed talking points. Which is precisely what we've sort of come to expect from these sort of corporate media mouthpieces. However, Parker ends her column with a valuable suggestion. Quote, when someone spews obscenity, shout them down. When politicians and pundits use inflammatory language, condemn them. When you choose to remain silent, consider yourself complicit in whatever transpires. Thanks for the advice, Kathleen. All that, again, and so much more on the latest episode of The New World next week. And speaking of, CorbettReport.com, again, I look up to James Corbett, one of the hardest working guys out there in the alternative media and open source intelligence world. Two episodes last week, episodes 126 and 127 from CorbettReport.com. 126 is the audio off top of the latest 2+ hour documentary from Jason Burmes, of course, co-creator of Loose Change, as well as his own I can't remember the name of it. His previous documentary. However, the new one is called Invisible Empire, breaking down and defining the New World Order from the present day to back to folks like H.G. Wells. You know him from books like The Time Machine, but he also wrote books called The Open Conspiracy and The New World Order. But episode 127 from Corbett Report is the real new episode. You are being prepped. False flag season once again all upon us as the OKC rhetoric ratchets up, all surrounding the April 19th OKC 15th anniversary. The media is preparing the public to expect domestic terrorism just as they were in 94. And we're going to get more into that with some of the surrounding threataganda, propaganda, agitprop surrounding the OKC anniversary. Of course, the fantastic Sunday update videos from CorbettReport.com, the latest swine flu cover-up, ClimateGate whitewash, and Goldman Limited hangout. Of course, new interviews from Greg Nicoletos of We the People Will Not Be Chipped and WakeUp.TV, John Young of Cryptome, Rebecca Jeschke of EFF.org, and Stuart Rhodes of The Oath Keepers. This is what it's about, my friends. We are in an information war, and again, they want us to tear each other apart. And I worry that we're going to be ripe for the picking as things get worse. We need more community. Talk to your neighbors. Talk to your coworkers. We got to drop the water cooler talk of Tiger Woods and tabloids and American Idol and all that garbage. Neil Postman was kind of right in entertaining ourselves to death. So, as we've given much bravos and props to Alex Ansary and his speech to the Portland City Council, CorbettReport.com also released on Monday, April 19th, basically a message. And this goes along with, several months ago, a message James put out to the environmental movement. And, of course, that movement being completely hijacked and misdirected by the same corporate-controlled foundations and families that cause the problems and poses our saviors. Surrounding this new hype, and as we call threataganda, James Corbett of CorbettReport.com has an impressive message on when false flags don't fly anymore.
Those who have studied history know that nothing invigorates and empowers an authoritarian regime more than a spectacular act of violence, some sudden and senseless loss of life that allows an autocrat to stand on the smoking rubble and identify himself as the hero. It's at moments like this that the public, still in shock from the horror of the tragedy that has just unfolded before them, can be led into the most ruthless despotism. Despotism that now bears the mantle of security. Acts of terror and violence never benefit the average man or woman. They only ever benefit those in positions of power. This is why Nero fiddled while Rome burned. It gave him a chance to throw out the Christians to the lions and rebuild the capital of the Roman Empire in his own image. This is why Hearst and the warmongers of the emerging American Empire were delighted by the destruction of the USS Maine in Havana Harbor in 1898. It gave them the excuse they needed to rouse the public into supporting the Spanish-American War. This is why Israel attacked the USS Liberty in 1967 during the Six-Day War, strafing and torpedoing it relentlessly for hours in a vain attempt to send it to the bottom. The Israelis believed that the loss of the Liberty could be blamed on Egypt and draw the Americans into war. This is why there are hundreds of documented examples of government staging attacks in order to blame them on their political enemies. In every civilization, in every culture, in every historical period, authoritarians have known that spectacular acts of violence help to further consolidate their own power and control. And sadly, throughout history, there have been all too many willing to allow attacks to occur, to pretend that attacks have occurred, or even to attack their own population in order to further their political agenda. To think that such staged provocations and false flag attacks no longer occur would be as unrealistic as believing that human nature itself has changed, that powerful people no longer seek to increase their power, that influence is never used for deceit or manipulation, that lies are no longer told to satisfy greed or slake the thirst for control. It is to believe that our society is immune from those things that we have seen in every other society, in every other era. In short, it's a dangerous delusion. The people are once again learning the power of this delusion. They are learning the extent to which they have been lied to. They are once again studying their history. The Russians are learning how the FSB was caught planting bombs in Moscow in 1999 during a terror scare that swept Putin into power and stirred the public into supporting the Second Chechen War. They are learning how their autocratic ex-president came to power campaigning on the graves of those his old FSB cronies had killed. The Israelis are learning how Mossad has been caught time and again posing as the very Muslim terrorists they claim to be opposing. They're learning how Israel uses the specter of terror to further extend their blank check drawn on American funds to expand their police state at home and maintain their hardline stance, the world's sixth largest nuclear superpower supposedly threatened by the possibility that one of their neighbors may one day obtain a single nuclear weapon. The British are learning how their SAS officers were caught dressing up as Arabs in Iraq, driving around with trucks full of munitions, shooting at police to stir up ethnic tensions, and ensure that permanent bases could be built in the region. They're learning how Harun Aswat, the supposed mastermind behind the 7/7 bombings, was working for British intelligence. They're learning how British military intelligence took part in IRA bombings. The Indians are learning how the Mumbai attack was helped by a U.S. agent who was cooperating with investigators so that he won't face questioning by foreign authorities. The Canadians are learning how their own provincial police dressed up as protesters in 2007 and threatened violence against other police in order to force a crackdown on peaceful protests. and the Americans. The Americans are learning that there were multiple bombs found, dismantled, and taken out of the Alfred P. Murrah building on April 19, 1995. They are learning that Timothy McVeigh had written a letter to his sister in which he claimed to be in the Special Forces for the U.S. Army. They are learning the bombing was being directed by FBI informants, just as the 1993 World Trade Center bombing was. They are learning about 9/11 and the Gulf of Tonkin and Operation Northwoods and their own Army counterinsurgency manuals that teach officers how to commit false flag attacks to blame on their enemies. In short, the people are learning the truth. And now we see the same build-up to a false flag event taking place that we saw in 1995. At that time, the U.S. had a corporate media desperate to fling mud at anyone concerned by the actions of their government, and it had a government that was desperately unpopular. Today, we see the exact same factors at play. If anything, the situation today is worse than it was in the run-up to the Oklahoma City bombing, with media consolidation meaning that groups of concerned citizens like the Oath Keepers are being attacked by the controlled minions on both the left and the right. And now it is not just the militia that is being demonized by the establishment. It is veterans and gun owners, third-party supporters and libertarians, anti-war protesters and human rights campaigners, people who are upset with the government giving trillions to the banks that have engineered our current financial crisis. In short, everyone is now a potential terrorist according to the governmental and media agencies that deign to limit our range of acceptable opinion and control dissent. Even the word terrorist means something more than it did back in 1995. Now, after the false flag attack of 2001 allowed the passage of the Patriot Act, after the boogeyman of Al-Qaeda gave the NSA the opportunity to announce that they were collecting everyone's emails and everyone's telephone calls, after the former White House press secretary came out and admitted that the Bush administration had made up terror threats in order to scare the people into supporting the government, now we know what the real definition of terrorism is. It is governments scaring their own populations into line. But there is something else that's different now from what it was in 1995. The people are learning something else about terrorism. They are not terrorists for speaking out against their government. They are not terrorists for wanting the government to stop selling their children into servitude to pay bankers their bonuses. They are not terrorists for pointing out that the FBI and the CIA and Mossad and MI6 are behind every major international terrorist event. The people are not terrorists because they do not want to see more death. They do not want more destruction. The spilling of the blood of their fellow citizens is not in their interests. Death and destruction only ever serve the governmental and financial and industrial interests who always grow in power and wealth in the wake of every tragedy. Time and again, the people pay with their lives, and the governments and the banks and the war machine only grows and prospers. The people do not want terrorism because it does not benefit them. It only benefits the existing power structure. And this time, if there is another staged event to blame on the government's enemy of the day, the people will know who to blame. For the Corbett Report in Western Japan, I am James Corbett.
Such strong, well-documented, well-spoken, pertinent. I just couldn't put it any better. When false flags don't fly anymore. This takes us directly to our next post. Homegrown Threatiganda surrounds OKC anniversary. Government prepping you for domestic terror attacks. This from Paul Joseph Watson. Bill Clinton, the Southern Poverty Law Center, and almost the entire corporate media are not letting a good opportunity go to waste by dancing on the graves of 168 victims and exploiting the 15th anniversary of the false flag Oklahoma City bombing to demonize their political enemies, the internet, and anyone who dares to express dissent against the federal government. The propaganda putsch coincides with FBI head Robert Mueller stating that right-wing extremist groups and anti-government militias now represent as big a threat as Al-Qaeda, as the whole apparatus of the war of terror is shifted to target Americans increasingly angry at the egregious corruption in the government and the global economy as their standard of living plummets and their pension funds are under threat of seizure. It also dovetails with President Obama's hyping last week of the threat posed by individuals acquiring nuclear weapons, a claim top nuclear experts like Henry Sokolsky have derided as overstated and not based on any new intelligence. Obama's warning arrived shortly after FEMA was forced to scale back a simulated nuclear bomb attack by terrorists in Las Vegas that was set to involve 10,000 emergency responders, U.S. troops, and officials in role-playing exercises. More on national-level exercise in just a few minutes. Former President Bill Clinton told CNN's Wolf Blitzer last Friday that he's worried rising anger at the federal government could lead to another OKC bombing, implying people who use the net to express dissent will be blamed for the violence. All the documentation is there for you, my friends. Lauren Coleman at Copycat Effect goes into the twilight language of 419 and 420 and all the things that surround this date. And we have a ton of updates. Yes, Virginia, there are Oklahoma City bombing truthers. That's from Lou Rockwell alongside a video from General Benton Parton, who investigated OKC. And it goes on. Oklahoma City marks 15 years since bombing. Recalling 95 bombing, Clinton sees parallels. That's from the New York Times, and he also wrote an op-ed himself, taking his Tea Party criticism to the old gray lady. Counterpunch goes into Clinton and terror, a lethal hypocrisy. Clinton launches demonization campaign on OKC bombing anniversary. Dick Morris, and this comes from CanadaFreePress.com, notes that Clinton orchestrated the Waco tragedy. Same date, different year. Great videos, OKC reality check, rare footage again documenting the multiple larger bombs found within the buildings, documenting the SWAT teams and the bomb squads, warned in advance not to show up. And this amazing one, what was the Army doing with a Ryder truck just before the Mura blast? Surveillance photos showing a Ryder truck hidden on a military base days before OKC. CNN gets more into the act on their show Radical Right, or rather Radical or Right, Anger Against the Government. More on that from RestoreTheRepublic.com. The massive propaganda piece from the left, Gatekeepers, Foundation-funded Microsoft, General Electric, NBC whores, the McVeigh tapes, MSNBC, Maddow, and Agitprop. We've got the Indiana lawyer who prosecuted McVeigh reflecting. That's on theindychannel.com. Hollywood reporting film depicting Waco siege in production. However, from reddirtreport.com, Mura bombing survivor says the feds involved. And we've got a two-part video interview with OKC survivor Jane Graham talking inside job. Yes, Virginia, there are Oklahoma City bombing truthers. And what does this all tie in with? Again, as we shift perspective from forest to trees and back again, new polls, 4 out of 5 Americans don't trust Washington. A third of Americans say their own government is a threat. America's great compromiser, Henry Clay, called government the great trust. But most Americans today have little faith in Washington's ability to deal with the nation's problems. Public confidence in government is at one of the lowest points in half a century, according to a new survey from Pew Research Center. 8 in 10 Americans say they don't trust the federal government and have little faith it can solve America's ills. The survey illustrates the ominous situation Obama and the Dems face as they struggle to maintain their comfortable congressional majorities in the fall elections. Midterm prospects are typically tough for the party in power. Add a toxic environment like this and lots of incumbent Democrats could be out of work. Again, the shifting back and forth. One party's in favor, one party's out of favor, but they prop each other up. The survey found that just 22% of those questioned say they can trust Washington almost always or most of the time, and just 19% say they're basically content with it. Nearly half say their government negatively affects their lives, a sentiment that's grown over the past dozen years. This anti-government feeling has driven the Tea Party movement, reflected in fierce protests this past week. that's a positive development. If we can have some kind of brakes put on this agenda that keeps screaming forward, and again, we note, it's incremental. It's the frog boil. It's the desensitization. However, sometimes they need a massive, catalyzing, catastrophic terror event, and that moves the police state agenda 10 years ahead of time in lightning speed. And that's why we've always talked about the drills that the military-industrial complex and their rogue networks and patsies and moles and private military contractors, that whole world that they infest. As we referenced earlier, the drills and the military exercises always seem to be going on, whether it's 9/11 and the dozen plus war games and military exercises and drills concerning hijacked jets crashing into government buildings, Operation Nine Lives, presidential succession drill being run surrounding the attempted assassination of Ronald Reagan and the Bushy Knoll, Peter Power and Visor Associates running drills on the morning of 7/7 in London, July 7th, 2005. Exact same trains and buses hit as were depicted in this drill that went live. We've also noted the exercises and drills involving biolabs and the quote-unquote accidental release of germs that, of course, can only be created in labs such as these. So when they break out, we're not supposed to point at the source? Is there real terror? Of course. But it's usually one person, and it's a small, emotional, bloody event. It's the massive terror events that, as I've said again and again, the kind that get their own logo on the corporate media news shows. They're getting us desensitized to a police state by running these terror drills. It helps desensitize us to seeing the military on our streets, desensitizes good people within law enforcement and the military to be working under some sort of federal mandate with international troops. And it provides an opportunity for the rogue networks, the red teams, if you will. And do they know they're involved in drills? Maybe not. Do they know who they're working for? Maybe not. Does the left hand know what the right hand is doing? Maybe not. Terror drills, private military contractors, and police state prep. And again, the question, why is FEMA trying to cover up National Level Exercise 2010? Publicintelligence.net received a request from FEMA to remove a for official use only document regarding the National Level Exercise 2010, NLE10, which was scheduled for this coming May. The exercise was to be based on National Planning Scenario 1, which simulates a nuclear detonation in the U.S. city. However, recent political pressure has led to the exercise being scaled back, according to the Washington Post, Christian Science Monitor, and a variety of other publications. At the behest of Senator Harry Reid, Democrat out of Nevada, the exercise Nevada events have reportedly been canceled, and the FEMA website now shows no mention of National Level Exercise 10. On top of this, Obama emphasizing the threat of domestic nuclear attack, tying in with the Nuclear Security Summit on April 13th, emphasizing again that the threat of terrorists using nuclear weapons inside major metropolitan cities is one of the greatest threats that the world faces. And as a sidebar, we always note, when we accuse rogue nations, quote-unquote, worldwide, of having weapons they shouldn't have, it's usually because we've supplied them, either through our fronts or cutouts, or just overtly, and again, as Alan Dulles said, the American people don't read. We have trouble remembering what happened last week, let alone last year, let alone last decade. Continuing, National Level Exercise 2010 concerned itself with that exact scenario, the detonation of a nuclear device inside a U.S. city. Las Vegas was to be the epicenter of this hypothetical attack, and if the exercise utilized the same circumstances as the aforementioned National Planning Scenario 1, it would have involved hundreds of thousands of casualties, 300,000 refugees, and more than a million displaced people. The unpopularity of a scenario, regardless of its security benefits, is obvious. What's strange is the attempt that's now being made by FEMA to eliminate references to the exercises and remove from circulation a document that played an important role in drawing attention to the exercise. As the state of National Level Exercise 10 is unclear at the moment, it's difficult to say whether the request is truly motivated by security or whether there is a more dubious intention. And now the context and the subtext. From the great blog of Goats and Men, 9/11 connected L3 designed the NLE-10 nuke detonation drill. Dove Zockheim's Booz Allen Hamilton is also involved. Reading quickly, according to Wayne Madsen, a longtime L3 communications consultant for the NSA was, according to our source from WayneMadsenReport.com, one of the very few recipients of the live video stream that caught the first plane hitting the North Tower. There it is again. L3 was also one of the corporations flagged by the SEC as having been traded suspiciously before 9/11. Another corporation involved in NLE 10, Bridgeborne, describes the exercises in a press release. Publicintelligence.net published a copy of the overview, and again, there is massive documentation, PDFs, and more. Another corporation involved with NLE 10, Booz Allen Hamilton, owned by the Carlyle Group. Joan Dempsey, top assistant to CIA Tenet, said, "I like to call Booz Allen Hamilton the shadow IC for intelligence community." Booz Allen Hamilton has notable members including Dove Zockheim, who's a vice president there. Zockheim was the Pentagon controller when the trillions went missing the day before 9/11, is a PNAC signatory, contributed to the PNAC Rebuilding America's Defenses article, and is mentioned by some as a mastermind of 9/11 for his work as a CEO of Systems Planning Corporation, which works on fly-by-remote systems for aircraft. It's also mentioned that Booz Allen was a client of Blessed Relief, the charity that was a front for Osama bin Laden. So is this now the most of what we know? Our third piece on terror drills, private military contractors, and police state prep, Golden Phoenix. FEMA's NLE 10 simulated nuclear attack, false flags over Los Angeles. The simulation slash exercise Golden Phoenix appears at that time to be heading now to Los Angeles in June, simulating the detonation of a 10 kiloton nuclear device. Links to the Homeland Stupidity FEMA NLE calendar. Some of the same type of exercises that were being conducted on 9/11 in the U.S. And of course, bearing all this in mind, that National Level Exercise 10 programs aren't set in stone and are all subject to change. And we're going to have to follow this story on the terror drills that, of course, from right here in Portland, Oregon, we've seen no shortage of in the last few years. Black helicopters over Portland for DOD terror drills is one of MediaMonarchy.com's most hit articles. Now, quickly, let's run down all the connected text and subtext and context on police state updates. We don't have time. I was going to play a long clip from WNYC.org. That's a nice put-together little radio piece. How New York officials prepare for a dirty bomb threat. And here's one of the ways. Yesterday, New York City firefighters and Marines held a terror drill. That's from WCAX. More and more from Marines.mil. Marines join FDNY for large-scale drill simulating response to terrorist attacks on bus and subways. TSA joins the NYPD in subway baggage screening. More on that from DNAinfo.com. And more articles on the drills from NBCNewYork.com and WPIX. A side note, did the NYPD bungle a terror case by ignoring the FBI? That's much too long a story to get into right here, but it concerns the Imam Ahmad Was Afzali. Chicago area cop charged for beating an unarmed man. Police need more powerful weapons to combat Mumbai-style terrorist attacks, say police chief. That's from Dot Connector UK, and of course, David Headley, the U.S. intelligence officer involved in the Mumbai false flag attacks of 1126. An interesting note from everybody's favorite guru of foundation-funded left gatekeeper media. But Noam Chomsky notes we shouldn't ridicule Tea Party protesters. He's also, of course, been noted as saying, who cares if 9/11 was a conspiracy? Journalists arrested, held for asking Rove a question during appearance. Underground military base investigator Richard Souter arrested. More on that from KeyholePublishing.com and Danger Room. Crystal-covered protester arrested after nuclear break-in, this going down in Minot, North Dakota. Motorists spied on and filmed as UK police carry out secret tests of new high-tech speed cameras. That's from the Daily Mail, but jumping back to the North American Union from the OCRegister.com. California City hates the red light cameras. Will voters agree? We've, of course, documented companies like Lockheed buying up red light cameras, dialing down the yellow times to increase money, and, of course, increasing the death of you. New speed trap cameras. New speed cameras trap UK motorists from space. That's from the Telegraph. Proposed Arizona law, which we've already discussed. It's on the top of Google News right now. The proposed law, show your citizenship papers or go to jail. This ties in the coming immigration dog and pony show, tied in with the birther meme and all those things. Man detained in Toronto with batteries and shrapnel in his shoes. Authorities say Ohio man had a napalm bomb. Intel chief says small terror groups are a key challenge. And the last clip we have time for is an amazing one, and this really illustrates all that we talk about on the show, the phony left-right paradigm. We now see the Obama-siah in, and most of the well-meaning left have gone back to bed. As we've said for the last couple of years, we hope and are trying to force all those folks out there to have their old shit moment about what's really going down, and that this didn't start with Obama and it didn't start with Bush. But we see the main talking heads, whether that's Olbermann or Maddow and Goodman and all them, or Beck and Limbaugh and Palin and, in this case, Michael Savage. When it's their party, they can't see it. But when it's the other team, they can see all the things that, again, no one puppet president has a monopoly on: false flag terror events and austerity and the loss of personal liberties. Michael Wiener Savage says the Obama regime will stage violence to crush dissent.
They want you to react. Don't you understand what Obama's doing with his little men? You can turn it off now. His little men on the left are trying to provoke you into a violent act so that they can declare you the illegitimate ones. Don't take the bait. They want the Tea Party to explode. They have probably sent the Jean Provocateurs in there with guns. I can guarantee you that this government is going to do something along those lines, whether it's sooner or later. It's going to happen, and I'll make another prediction on this show right now, because it doesn't take a genius to know what this illegitimate band of gangsters is going to do next. I'll make it very clear for you. This illegitimate group of gangsters is not only going to cause a violent action somewhere in America that is not conducted by the Tea Parties, but by an agent provocateur that they sent into the crowds along the lines of what the left has done from the beginning of the left, okay? But the October surprise that they have in mind for this world is not to be imagined, because they know they're going to lose. If they ever played it fair and square, A, number one, they they wouldn't be in power today. That's to start with. If they ever played it fair and square, the illegal aliens never would have been permitted to vote, and you wouldn't have 90% of the problems you have today. But put that aside. If they ever played it fair and square, they'd be out of office come November, my friends. We could talk about this until we're blue in the face, and it's not going to do a damn thing. Because as we speak, the enemies of freedom are planning their next move if it hasn't been done already. They are going to, they've already planted the agent provocateurs in the Tea Parties, and they're only waiting to set them off like the sleeper cells that Al-Qaeda allegedly had in the United States of America. Mark my words, I would hazard a guess, knowing how politicians have worked who don't have the interests of the people at heart, going way back, that the agent provocateurs have been planted like sleeper cells inside the Tea Parties, and they're going to let them go off all at once. Make no mistake about it, they want that to happen. They want the flashes to go off, and they will be behind it, in my estimation. Maybe the Tea Parties can stop it. Maybe someone else can. But if action is not taken soon, the Iron Heel fascism of the left will have crushed free speech in America.
And he's totally right. All the while still playing on the grand chessboard within the phony left-right paradigm. You can see all the things that were just as apparent during the previous puppet administration, but you couldn't see it with your own party. That's what we want to break down here. Last few notes on terror drills, private military contractors, and police state prep. Cumberland, Pennsylvania, now taking DUI suspects' blood. This story's been spreading around the country over the last couple of years. It ain't just happening in Cumberland, PA. More on that from WHTM.com. Southern California police raid homes of white supremacists. Underpants bomber inspires new counter-terror pursuit team. And the last note, Senate committee subpoenas Obama administration for Fort Hood documents. And again, as I say, massive stories. We could do whole episodes on probably any of those stories, and perhaps we need to, but we don't have time, as time is quite quickly running out. The way we want to end this show, and I have to send huge thanks to my man Dave from right here in Portland, posted up a link on Facebook, and again, you can make contact, facebook.com/MediaMonarchy. Yes, they're a CIA cutout front for data collection in the worldwide wiretap, but they're the most popular digital town square, so that's where we're going to bring the open source intelligence and wage the information war. I'd never heard of this story, and it's just one of those that just blew me away with the connections, both explicit and implicit. We have massive documentation, tons and tons of links within this, books, videos, interviews, biographies, bibliographies. So yesterday, April 22nd, was, of course, Earth Day. From the Philadelphia Bulletin, TheBulletin.us. Ira Einhorn, Earth Day co-creator, was the well-connected unicorn killer. Thursday, April 22nd. Yesterday was Earth Day, a holiday created to honor the planet and to raise the consciousness of man's effect on the environment. Philadelphia has a very strong tie to this day. One of its native sons, Ira Einhorn, was a co-founder of the Environmentalist Jubilee. But Mr. Einhorn has another line on his resume. In addition to being an environmental guru, he is the unicorn killer. While a student at the University of Pennsylvania, Mr. Einhorn dated a Bryn Mawr College graduate by the name of Holly Maddux, M-A-D-D-U-X. When the affair ended in 1977, Einhorn went into a jealous rage and murdered her. He concealed his crime for 18 months by stuffing Mrs. Maddox's body in a trunk that he kept in his apartment. The foul odor of the decomposing corpse coming from Einhorn's Powhatan Village apartment caused neighbors to complain. In 1979, police found the trunk stored in a closet in Einhorn's apartment. Ira Einhorn, member of the counterculture pantheon, one of the co-founders of the environmentalist movement, icon of the liberal intelligentsia, was charged with murder. But it wasn't just a simple murder, it was a gruesome case of domestic violence. At the bail hearing, Einhorn was praised by a contingent of luminaries, all testifying to his character. There were Ivy League professors, an Episcopalian minister, and corporate executives who worked with Einhorn raising funds. They all stated under oath that he was a man of the greatest integrity. Arlen Specter, currently Pennsylvania's senior United States Senator, was Ira Einhorn's attorney. He managed to get the bail set at the unheard-of amount of $40,000 for a suspected murderer. You only needed 10% to get him free. Barbara Bronfman, heiress to the Seagram liquor fortune, paid it. Proclaiming his innocence, Einhorn told all that he was framed. He said it was the CIA or FBI who committed the murder, and they were trying to frame him because of his political activities. Some will note that another notorious Philadelphia murderer, Mumia Abu-Jamal, used this defense a few years later. Like Mumia, Mr. Einhorn had no shortage of leftist followers. Mr. Einhorn skipped bail and left Philly in 81. More than a decade passed when the DA's office tried Einhorn in absentia for being unable to locate him. He was convicted in 93. Several years after that absentia conviction, in 97, Einhorn was located, living in France with his new girlfriend, a Swedish model. The district attorney's office in Philadelphia immediately asked to have him extradited. However, the humane French refused to extradite Mr. Einhorn. French officials cited the use of capital punishment in Pennsylvania and the conviction in absentia as reasons for their refusal. Einhorn was able to convince the French courts not to extradite him until he received the promise of a new trial. A Pennsylvania legislator, Dan O'Brien, introduced a bill in the Pennsylvania General Assembly that allowed granting Mr. Einhorn a new trial if he asked for it and if the French extradited him. The bill didn't vacate the original verdict. When France began extradition, Einhorn's representatives requested the European Court of Human Rights to review the case. Request denied. He was extradited to Pennsylvania in July 2001. He was tried, convicted, and sentenced to life in prison October 17, 2002. But there is a little-mentioned irony about the Einhorn saga. Ira Einhorn was arrested for murder March 28, 1979, the day the Three Mile Island nuclear plant accident occurred. Ira Einhorn, environmentalist, charged with murder during the same period as one of the greatest environmental accidents in U.S. history. But the real irony is that more people died in the apartment of Ira Einhorn, co-founder of Earth Day, than at Three Mile Island. The environmentalist killed more people than the so-called environmental disaster. Happy Earth Day! That amazing report is 1 year old, posted up on 2009 Earth Day from thebulletin.us, the Philadelphia Bulletin, and aside from the, again, phony left-right paradigm name-calling, the amazing connections here blow my mind. The Bronfman family and their connections. Arlen Specter, single bullet Specter, as his attorney. I don't know really how to break this story down anymore for you right now. It's all supplied on MediaMonarchy.com. These are the kind of stories that, again, if things weren't accelerating at such a rapid pace, and I didn't have to go through tons of headlines just to put them on the record, just to try to alert people as to what is going on, it's this kind of story that we like to flesh out, that kind of lays it all bare. Ira Einhorn, Earth Day co-creator, was the well-connected unicorn killer. Let's quickly look at a couple of the creepy customers coming to MediaMonarchy.com. In the past week, we had Headquarters USAISC out of Fort Huachuca, Arizona, the Society of Petroleum Engineers out of Richardson, Texas, and Raytheon out of Gardena, California. They Googled the creator of Earth Day, and they all landed on MediaMonarchy.com. And so should you, my friends. That's going to do it for this jam-packed April 23rd, 2010, episode 167 of MediaMonarchy.com. Again, as I noted, stay tuned for a B-side this weekend and more updates on my appearance at the panel discussion at the launch of Cascade Community Radio and the birthday of Radio23.org. Thanks to all of you who support and donate and help spread the word of MediaMonarchy.com. None of us can do any of this alone. April 23rd, 2010, episode 167. My name's James Evan Pilato of MediaMonarchy.com, telling you to get active or get radioactive. Take care.
whether you went on with the diary, or whether you did not cooperate, made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.